Hey everybody, welcome to another podcast of the American Spaniel Club Archival Committee, where we explore our past and record it for the future through interviews. My name is Charlie Bourne, and I'm your host again, and our guest today is Marilyn Spack. And those of you that don't know Marilyn, I'm sure all of you should, Marilyn and her husband, Hugh, bred well-known Cockers under the Umar prefix. She's based in Birmingham, Alabama, and she's been very active in the Spaniel Club, and of course, many of you know her as a renowned judge. Marilyn, welcome. Great to talk with you.
Nice to talk with you, Charlie.
So, why don't we catch up? I always say, you know, where should we start these conversations? And I think the best place is to dive in and share some stories with us, and a good place to start is from the beginning. So, tell us how you got started with Cocker Spaniels.
Okay, as a child, I had a Cocker like most everybody did in my day and age. And when Hugh and I married, we did not have any children, but we kind of thought we needed a puppy or something around to love. So we had to find one, and my husband went to a known veterinarian in the Buffalo, New York area, who put him in touch with a Cocker breeder in Niagara Falls who happened to be a member of the American Spaniel Club. And it kind of went from there. They did have some puppies.
Who was that person? Who was that person?
Elaine and Pankowski.
Oh, Pankowski.
Their last
okay.
name.
Yeah.
And they were members of not only the American Spaniel Club, but of the Cocker Club in New York, in the Niagara area up there.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to visit with them, and of course I wanted a puppy, meaning 6 or 8 weeks old, and they did not have anything like that available, but they did have an older male dog who was 6 months old. And I thought, no, 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 this is not for me. However, we went, we saw, and the dog did nothing but sit by my feet the whole time, ended up going home with us with a crate in hand and so forth. And, of course, this revolved itself in the fact you now need to groom the Cocker and so forth, and these people were very willing to work with us on that basis. And they introduced us to some other Cocker people at that time. And we did go to a couple fun matches, and it wasn't too long after that that we knew we were going to be moving to Birmingham, Alabama. And they, in turn, gave us the name of somebody in Birmingham, Alabama, a Bonnie Jesperson, who was a member of the American Spaniel Club, so that we could contact her and maybe get some ideas of who might trim our dog or just to give us some information about Cockers in Birmingham. So we moved to Birmingham, and I found out through going to a pet store to buy a toy for my dog, whose name was Max, that Bonnie Jesperson had just remarried and was in Germany. But a gentleman by the name of Charles Self had all of her dogs and was taking care of the things for her, and that he would be the one I should contact. So after we got settled and moved in, I did make that phone call and got to know Charles and Diane Self. And Charles trimmed Max, and when he got all finished, she said, oh, this is a really nice dog. And, of course, I said, of course he is. He's my dog. And he said, you know, we have point shows down here and so forth. He said, how about if we enter Max, which we did, and we went to our first point show down here and came away with a 5-point major.
Was Max
and
black?
At that show, and Charles and Diane, or Charles, had worked for Terry Stacy, recognized handler for our breed. And they were at the show, Charles, Charlotte, and Terry. And they took a look at Max and so forth and said, how about if we take him home and finish this dog? And so that is what we did. We sent Max home with them and they come back 6 weeks later as a finished champion. And we kind of went from there, and Diane and Charles introduced us to other Cocker people and other doggy people. And, of course, we knew no one down here. And so it was great to go to their kennel club meetings of the all-breed clubs. And that really is where I got to get my dentist, my lawyer, and my doctor. And that's a true story. And anyway, through that, we let me see.
Marilyn,
you know,
Marilyn,
yeah.
I I have to ask you, what year was it that you started with Max? When was that?
We moved down here in 71.
Oh, okay.
So it would have been in 71 into 72.
Uh-huh. And was Max a
And it was during that time then, with meeting Diane and Charles, that we in turn joined the American Spaniel Club.
Oh, okay.
Because they had all kinds of magazines for me to look at. And that's how I kind of got into looking at different dogs and getting a feel for something that appealed to me and to Hugh. And like I say, we did not know people here. So given the opportunity to go with the Selfs and go to different shows in our area was something for us to do on the weekends. And it was a fun thing, got us to go to different areas that we had never been to and to meet up with folks that we would have probably never met had we not had that advantage of going to those shows.
Hmm.
And so once Max got home and everything, and we at this point had, as you say, got bit by the bug, so to speak, of liking all this and wanting to do something further in it. So Terry and them suggested that we find a female, a bitch, as we call them, to go with our Max and kind of start a little bit of a breeding program of our own. And Terry had shown a lot of dogs for Kay and Larry Hardy of the mm-hmm. Hobnob Hill Cockers.
Right.
And he said, Kay has a litter, and I can put in a good word, and I think we can get you one of the bitches. And that is how we did get our Heather girl, who was Hobnob Hill Hotsy Totsy.
So and that would have been black, right?
No, she was red.
Oh, okay. And Max
she came
was?
Down through the R. She came down through the R true, and side of the Hobnail Hip dogs. Even though a lot of their dogs were black,
yeah,
they had some Cherry's Jubilee and things like that. Some of those dogs that they had.
Yeah, and I forgot that. Yeah,
uh-huh,
and Max was and black. That, was Max black that, or Ascob?
Max was a buff dog.
He was, okay.
He was buff, and he was champion Clearwater Straight Flush. Clearwaters was Pinkowski's kennel name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we got Heather, and we bred them together. And it was kind of a traumatic getting them into the world because, of course, I didn't know very much about whelping puppies. But Diane came over to help me, and at that time, Polly Swanson was living in Birmingham. And we were all friends. And Polly came over also, so we spent the night trying to whelp this bitch, of which halfway through we knew we weren't going to get these without getting in touch with a veterinarian that we had become very good friends with. And so 2 o'clock in the morning, we carried the little girl down and sectioned her out and ended up with 4 puppies, 2 bitches and 2 dogs. And it was one of those bitches that later on I sold to Dee Jerkavich in Atlanta. Oh, no. The Palm mm-hmm. Hill Kennel,
mm-hmm.
and that was Samantha. And the 2 dogs I placed, I had never raised these to sell as show prospects. I really didn't know what that was all about at that time. It was more or less of having the litter and keeping something that I wanted so that we could show something else. I went generation to generation rather than breeding a lot of litters in the whole time that I was in this.
And it was very social. And actually, you know, I mean, it was a good way to meet people. You were new to Birmingham. That's an
right.
interesting
and
we way.
Had, and not having any responsibilities to keep us home, so to speak.
Right.
We could just take off and go.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was good. And so anyway, having met Dee was a wonderful thing. And she became a lifetime friend. And we collaborated on a lot of breedings. And went from there. So that's kind of my background and how I got into all of this.
Yeah, so Dee and you, you probably want to talk a little bit about some of the successes that you two had together back and forth. Because they were quite big.
She took Samantha, and Samantha was, okay, there had been a Spaniel Club show that I had gone to, and a buff dog of... I'm trying to think. It was a silversmith dog.
Oh, Camps.
He had gone, Winner's dog under mm-hmm. Charlie Milring. And I was very impressed with this dog. And by this time, I had looked at a lot of pedigrees. I had looked at a lot of dogs in the magazines. But you need to form in your mind a look that you want to see when you breed dogs together. Number one, before you do any breeding, health, of course, is the main issue. You've got to have healthy animals, and their conformation has to conform. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time if you don't take a good, solid animal to a good, solid dog. And so I was very impressed with this silversmith dog. And when it was time to breed Samantha, Dee wasn't too sure. She hadn't seen him. And I kind of went out on a limb and said, this is a really, really nice dog. I liked so much about him. His movement, his eye expression, which is very important because I'm afraid I'm known as a headhunter. And that's fine. And so anyway, we bred Samantha to the silversmith's dog and got a bitch called Tiger Lily. And she went on to be winner's bitch at one of the upcoming national shows from there. And Tiger Lily then, in turn, was bred to this congressman's dog that Calvin and Dale Ward have. And that produced my point, the Dreamer dog, which is the Palm Hill Caribou Solid Gold dog. And Tiger Lily also was bred to the Point of View dog, her first breeding, because Dee wanted a older dog that was eye-cleared and still looked good. And we had seen the Point of View dog, Pinder's Point of View, down in Tampa at one of the nationals. And he was 10 years old in the veteran class at that time. And very impressive for a 10-year-old dog. And so even though he was black and tan, we felt that would still tie in right with the buff line that we had. And from that, Dee got two bitches out of it. And that Hugh and I went over to see while she and her husband were out of the country. And I fell in love with one of the red bitches. I just absolutely was taken with her. And when Dee came home, she wanted to know what I thought of the two bitches, and I told her, and she's, oh, heaven's sakes, no, 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 she's too feisty, I don't like her. And I said, well, I love her. And she said, well, do you want her? I said, she's coming with me. So I took her home, and that was my Palm Hill Humor's Wildfire bitch, who later was bred to her half-brother, Dreamer. And that produced most of the dogs that I had that had the gold in the name.
Oh, okay.
And so, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It was just ringing. And so Dreamer and Marg produced this Go for the Gold, the Solid Gold, those different dogs. Mm-hmm. Marg also was bred to the congressman dog, and that produced Hugh Meyer's Regal Cottonwood and the Hell's a Poppin' dog that went to Europe. And later on, then, I bred Dreamer back to a Margarita and got Twiggy, which was my one and only bitch because she only produced, I bred her three times. She only had a total of 9 puppies, all of which finished, 3 of which were multiple best in show dogs. And I think that's kind of a little bit of a record on a bitch with so few puppies to have 3 multiple best in show winners from the what she produced.
Quality over quantity.
Then I took that bitch back to her sire, which everybody kind of thought I was crazy to do that, but I talked with Al Grossman about that before I did it. And he said, well, you know, you're taking a chance, mm-hmm. but you're also stamping in something, and you could later breed any of them to a garbage can and still get your look. And so I did breed it, and we got 2 bitches from that, which later on took those 2 bitches to the same outcross dog to see what we really had stamped in. And it was about that time then that with my judging and everything that I backed away from breeding because I felt it was more or less of a conflict of interest with judging and having dogs out there being special that I had bred. Didn't set right with a lot of people, and I thought, okay, either I judge or I breed, and at that point I chose the judging aspect.
Yeah, this isn't one of the questions we usually ask because I don't usually have this happen, but you know, now that you brought it up, you did pick judging over breeding.
Yes.
So what led to that decision, or can you share any of that, and are, do you have any regrets on that?
Yes, I do. I do have regrets from that. If I had it all over to do, I would have still continued to breeding.
Really?
I did have some say in some of the bitches that I knew and so forth because of people that had them that I knew and so forth, and we were friends. But I would have not have worried so much about what people thought or said. I would have gone ahead and bred them. And the one thing that I really do regret at this time, know much more about it, it was the frozen semen aspect.
Mm.
That we didn't save any of that. It was not the big thing to do at that point in time.
No.
It was expensive. Dreamer at that point was out on the West Coast. They were doing it on the East Coast. We just never followed through on it, and that truly is something I'm very sorry for at this point.
Yeah, because
I'd love to be able to have had some straws and be able to certain bitches that I have found out there that I just love to see what we would have continued to produce.
Yeah, you could do it now, you know, now. If you wanted to. But that was Dreamer, you know, time flies. We were talking earlier before we got on the call. So Dreamer was late 80s? Was that late 80s?
He was what? The time goes by me.
I know. Yeah.
It all runs together, but.
I think it was because I'm.
It was in the 80s, and it's interesting how he came up with the name of Palm Hill Caribou Solid Gold was the fact that there were two dogs in the litter, and of course Dee never kept a dog, so I kept the dogs, and I had of course a preference for one of the puppies, and at that time Charles and Diane still were showing for us and so forth, and Charles liked the other one. Well, entered in a puppy show, Aubrey show, and unfortunately Charles switched arm in numbers, not realizing that he had the wrong armband in for the wrong dog, and one of the puppies, the one I liked, won. So that's how Dreamer got that name, because my girlfriend Carolyn, she wanted to keep one of the puppies, and she did. Shaker was his name, and he carried a humor prefix, but Carolyn had her wanted a prefix of Caribou, her husband's and her name in Palm Hill. And so Dreamer ended up with the name she had for the other dog, and that's how that revolved around. It was just, and Charles, you know, at that point, oh, Lord, he, honest as he could be, he was scared to death he'd get penalized or something, having had the wrong armband on with the wrong puppy name. And I said, don't worry about it. Doesn't matter what name he carries. That's the one I keep. And so he took him to ASC that year and went Winner's Dog.
So, and you know, then from, oh, yeah, go
from
ahead.
There, he went out with Greg Anderson, saw him at the ASC show, and wanted to know if he could take him out west and show him out there, which he did do, and Dreamer stayed out there for about a year or two before we brought him home.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things we talk about are your mentors, and we kind of, in the course of saying how you got started, you sort of mentioned all these very well-known people, and I guess they all sort of serve as mentors for you, right?
They truly were, and like I say, Terry and Charlotte were so helpful, and Charles and Diane were so helpful to us. And meeting so many of the people gave us an opportunity to talk dogs. You were in that same age area that we were. You'd go to the Nationals, you'd go to this, and you physically sat around and discussed all of this. And Michael Allen was a big influence. She would come here many times to Birmingham because she and Polly were very close friends. And Michael at one time had lived in Birmingham. And so, you know, we'd talk and we'd debate dogs and we'd have different feelings on different things. And to me, it was a look that I wanted to see in that ring. And that's basically how I picked my dog. As I say, first of all, you had to have the structure. I mean, if you didn't have that, you didn't have a dog that you needed to be showing. You needed to find a home. Okay, what's your next question, sir?
So, you know, looking back, one of the things that, you know, hindsight, are you okay? You need some water?
No, that's okay.
Okay. So, 2020 hindsight, what do you know now that you wish you had known when you started?
Like I say about the frozen semen, I would have liked to have known about that, what an influence, or have known ever known that one dog can have such an influence on a breed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just don't think of that sometimes. And some of the things that, one of the things that I would tell people is to think for yourself and to please yourself with what you're doing and be honest with yourself when you evaluate these litters. And just because you think a dog looks good, anybody can take and finish a dog with enough time and enough money. But that's not what I wanted. I wanted a good, solid dog to come forward. Number of champions was not that important to me. It was the quality of the champions that you put out there. And I think that's, we've gotten away from some of that. The numbers games has come into play more and more.
Yeah.
And at the time that I was in it, we still have the cataract problem, of course, but it was far more prevalent at the early times when I got in this in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And we have come a long way with that, and thank God we've been able to save a lot of problems for a lot of people, because if they follow through on what they need to do, and we change the futurity rules too, making it, for the age limits and things like this, and the clearness mm-hmm. and getting these testing things, so that when we put dogs out there, we say to people, this is as clear as we can put out at this time.
So the world today for dog breeders and dog shows is really far different culturally and government.
Very, very mm-hmm. much so.
Yeah, than when you started or I started. So if somebody were getting into Conkers today, and you may run into people given your role and stature, what do you advise people who are starting in Conkers today?
Well, first of all, I would say they need to be in touch with somebody who understands structure and who understands the breed and who doesn't just take and finish a dog. Okay, let's go back one step further. When you and I were in it, you had a lot of professional handlers, and they would have the choice of many of the top dogs to show because they work so hard at doing this. And I think once we did away with the Handlers Association, then, quote-unquote, everybody became a professional handler.
Mm.
And there are some very great folks out there today who are showing the dogs. But there's also a lot of people who really don't understand the breed that they are showing. And so they are advising some of these people, and some of the folks are just not getting the right information to move forward. Just to finish a dog is not what it's all about. There's a lot of hard work, and you've got to have that feel for what you want and don't back away from it. I've had a couple litters that I've bred that they weren't what I wanted, and I found homes for them and placed them. We didn't bother showing them because it wasn't what I wanted to see in the ring. So I think the important thing is you've got to know what you want as far as a Cocker Spaniel is concerned and breed towards that gold.
Mm.
And, we've made a lot of friendships, and it's just been wonderful with all the people that we have been in touch with. And my husband, it was good for me that Hugh enjoyed it just as much as I did.
Yes, it was nice. That doesn't always happen, but as a husband and wife team, we're always both there.
Yeah, so,
he was always there.
Active in another way by being on the board and doing that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was not what you'd call one that was going to handle the dogs or bring them in or do anything like that, but he supported me in any way that he could as far as going to the shows and doing the things and being with the doggy people. He'd sit up with me at night with litters and so forth.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important how you raise your litters. I really do. And you've got to spend time with them. If you don't have the time to work and bring a litter along, then you don't need to be breeding that bitch just to have puppies.
Well, I think before we got on the call today, we said a Michael Allen quote, at least I remember it as Michael Allen always saying it, not all champions should be bred. Not all dogs should be bred, you know.
That's exactly so. And I was very lucky in the handlers that I used, like Charles Self and Greg Anderson and Kyle Robinson. I had three, and with Diane Self as well, four people that worked around me and who helped me with my dogs and gave me pointers. And, of course, they presented them, and I was always proud of how my dogs looked in the ring. Win, lose, or draw, you want to be proud of what you see in the ring.
Yeah, it's interesting. You said something several times about being honest with yourself and your dogs about your dogs, which is don't be, you know, kennel blind. And I think that's probably, it's a very sound piece of advice, and it's probably the hardest for people to accept.
Yes. The second time that I ever bred my original bitch, Heather, at that point I was very new into all of this, and there was a dog out that had been doing a little winning, so obviously that's, of course, where I would take my bitch. And that I did, got two bitch puppies from it, and I remember taking them to Charlotte Stacy when they were about 6 or 7 months old for her to look at them and judge and everything, and she just said to me, Miron, they're nice little puppies. If you want, we'll finish them for you. And with that being said, I thought, this isn't what I want. These are not what I want her. I want her to look at my puppies and say, oh, boy, we can hardly wait to show these. And that was not the reaction I got. And I realized just breeding to a dog that's winning is not what you need to do. You need to really study your stud dogs. Look at what they are producing. Are they being consistent in a certain feature? And that's a stud dog.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this many times. A good stud dog, you can breed it to just about any bitch, and something of him will be in every litter. And that's a good stud dog. Because that's why you breed to the dog, because you want something of him.
Yep. Just a real quick story. Terry Stacy, we had a litter out of Skyjack. It was probably when Skyjack was just starting out as a stud dog. And I brought the pup, the litter to a show for Ruth to look at. They were still pretty young, and we put them in an X-Pen. And so Ruth said to Terry, these puppies are by Skyjack. And Terry looked around at them, and he was quiet for a minute or two, and he says, well, I wouldn't brag about it.
But it is true. You want to be able to look down the line and basically say, okay, that's out of here. This is out of this one. This is out of that one. Yeah. And sometimes I'd be judging and I'd go down a line and I'd have to just kind of close my eyes because I could tell which puppies had come through my line.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
It was a stamp. Too. And that was okay with me because, like I say, I love the headpieces, and to me that's what makes a Cocker different from some of the other sporting dogs, is you look at a headpiece, and it should have that beautiful, soft expression of intelligence and looking at you, and that's what I want to see. And if I didn't have it, those dogs were, I found homes for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I was lucky in that all of my litters, I didn't know what a lot of people meant by a dog planing out. Because truly and honestly, Charlie, my dogs never planed out. They kind of came with heads. Don't ask me why, how this ever started, but it was there from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And they just never planed out. And what you had, what you saw when they were a couple weeks old or into a month old, that's what you got.
Yeah, that's a line. I had dogs from certain lines where the heads, if they were plain as puppies, if they had certain traits within the head, they would be beautiful when they grew up. And if they were really plush when they were puppies, they'd be coarse when they grew up. So that's all about the pedigree and the line, and that's what you spent time learning about your own line, right? About what
right.
They need.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's why you have to
never stop learning. It's always a learning experience.
Well, actually, to go back to something else that we talked about before we got on the call was finishing puppies so early these days that you don't really know what to grow up to be like. So they finish at 6 and 7 months, and you never
right.
really get to see what they look like when they're a year and a half, which is what you're
That's
talking
correct.
About here, is
yes.
knowing
we
how
the
they mature.
Shows
right?
all the time. And you'd have dogs coming from all over the country, and you'd have your Flushing show in January, your national in the middle of July, but then you had these zone shows, let's say four different ones throughout the year in different parts of the country, and everybody went to those. And of course, we had the big numbers as far as entries and everything is concerned, but you got to see puppies that you might have seen in January when they were now maybe closer to a year old, and then people specialed these dogs at the zone shows and so forth, and you'd see dogs at 2 and 3 years old as to what they have matured into from when they were a puppy, and we're not privy to that at this point mm-hmm. in time.
And we used to, Cockers were criticized because they would grow, mature, finish, be specialed, and retire by the age of 3 or 4. And there's other mm-hmm. breeds that are out there, as you know, they don't special until they're like 5 or 6 or 7.
Right, exactly, exactly.
You know? And our breed tends to be over the hill by that age. Still is probably. So, you know, the next question I have is, like, mothers say they love all their children. But I always like to ask, so of all the Cockers that you had, were there any individual dogs that were particularly memorable for you that you still think of and smile?
Well, okay, of course, old Max, because of him being my first one.
Your first, right.
But I think old Heather, because, like I say, she was my foundation bitch. And about that time, after I had had her for a year or two, I had a cancerous condition and kind of had to take 6 months getting myself back on my feet and was in bed a lot. That bitch never left me. She was there. She just stayed right by my side. So it was kind of a devastating thing when I had to put her down.
A true companion.
Dreamer, of course, who I just loved from the time he was a puppy. It's just very, very special to me.
Mm-hmm. So how about people? Any individual?
How about people?
Yeah.
How about you, Charlie? You have always been special to me.
Oh, gosh. Thank you, Marilyn. I appreciate that.
Well, you and I served on the board for many, many years.
We have gone through much
together. And have had a lot of good experiences and so forth.
We did. We had a lot of hard times and great times. And
Exactly.
Enjoyed it. And I also, you were talking about you. I have to also credit people that got to know you. He'd always come up to you at a show and ask you how you were. He was always bright and chipper in the morning, which I never was, but he was always really good about coming and talking and chatting. He really enjoyed the dog shows. He really did.
He really, really did. He loved the people.
Yeah.
And as I say, he was so supportive of anything I wanted to do, and which is great because sometimes not everybody has that privilege. I mean, you've got other responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to go with the different folks to different shows and travel around and so forth. And then, of course, when I got into judging, he went with me to a lot of the places that we had maybe never been before and to some of the foreign countries and so forth and got to meet a lot of great folks over there and so forth. And I remember one time when I went to Spain, I had asked you about a place to stay in Barcelona, and you gave me the name of a place.
Yeah, in Barcelona.
And all I had to do was walk out that door and go one block, and I was on the hop-on and hop-off for tours all over the city.
Yeah, that was Barcelona, one of my favorite cities. Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful city.
Mm-hmm. But not Spain, because if you ever say it's in Spain, they'll correct you. Anyway, so, okay, people, I didn't mean you to pay me a compliment. So.
I think one of the things probably that is most memorable for me, of course, is my very first Best in Show. And it was under Ted Young, who I admired very much as a handler and a dog person. And, in fact, he awarded my Go for the Gold dog 2 Best in Shows at that time. And the funny thing of it is Kyle had him, and I hadn't gone to that show. And she had called, and we won a lamp. And the very next time that we went to some show or whatever it was, we won another lamp for Best in Show. So it got to be kind of a joke with us. She'd go and look and see if we had any lamps that were going to be for Best in Show. And she'd say, okay, we're going to go best today.
Do you have those lamps, or did you get rid of them?
I don't even know where those lamps are. Probably she kept them. I'd go up to the house sometimes, and she'd show me all the different things that we had won that she had in the house, and then the other pile was for me to take home.
Oh, yeah, you get this other stuff, yeah. So Ted gave you your first Best in Show.
The only Cocker he ever gave a Best in Show to, yes.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. He gave him two, yes.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
And then when he did Spaniel Club the year before he passed, both Floyd and Cece were in the running for that at that time. And even though I bred both of them, it kind of hurt a little bit when he went the other way, even though I was proud of both of the dogs. And that is when I went to the board with the Award of Merit System for the Spaniel Club. And that's when we instituted that.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
because
I
thought, you know, people have put so much of themselves in to these dogs. We need to reward some other dogs besides just the best of breed.
Well, I don't remember that. So that's something that I learned today. I didn't realize you had put that forth. Okay,
right.
Because that's an institution these days. You know, people really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think, yes, I really do. And I think it was a good thing that we instituted. And I had gotten the system in my kennel club was a Mort Goldfarb, who's very prominent in the German Shepherd Club. And he's the one who had explained the whole system to me, and it was their system that I brought to the board for approval, and that's what we approved, and that's what we use today.
Mm, very nice. Well, I think people really appreciate that because at that level, there's often several really nice dogs. And
although it's a cliche,
there is only one ribbon, and as a judge, you have to pick, right? So
exactly. But it's nice to be able to reward some of these other dogs that are in your ring. Like you say, you only have one that sends them forward. But there's so many beautiful dogs that are deserving. Mm-hmm. And you switch your choices the next day. You know, it's a dog show.
Yeah.
Some dogs show better on some days, and they show better the next day or not show.
As one of my mentors said, that's why they don't bet on dog shows. They bet on horses.
I guess so.
bet on horse racing, but not dog shows. So looking over your life with Cockers, is there anything that we didn't get to share that you'd like to talk about a little bit that wasn't covered in some of the questions that we chatted about?
Kelly, I think we've just about covered everything. It's been an experience for me, which has been wonderful. And like I say, the friendships that I have made and so forth stay with you all your life. And, you know, you go to some of the shows, and it's old home week, and it's like time hasn't really gone by when you're with some of these folks. Like you and I start talking this morning and everything, just like we had seen each other. And it's been how long?
I know. It's been a couple of years. And the funny thing is, the only thing that happens is I can't place anything because it all seems very recent. You know?
But there's been just a lot of great people in the dog show, and then later on, as we bred and so forth, is when I started breeding with Kathy Patterson and some of her dogs. And Kathy is very active with the American Spaniel Club, as you know,
sure,
by being the secretary,
yep,
and been on the boards with you and me. And, you know, these friendships just don't go away.
No, I've always stressed when I was on the board and when I was president and whenever I write and many of the calls that I've done on these podcasts, you know, I think one of the things that people always talk about is you stay in dogs because of the friendships. I mean, mm-hmm, I have not bred dogs. I think I finished my last dog in the early 90s, and I think I co-owned one in 2000 or something with Annette Zook. But other than that, I haven't had a dog in the ring, and yet I'm still active. Why am I active? I love the club, yada, 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 that's true. But you know what? I still have a ton of friends that you stay in touch with, you know. And that's, I think, the beauty of it, which actually, when you go back to your story, that's how you got started. It was you were new in Birmingham and you met all these new people, you know.
Right. And like I say, we didn't know anybody when we came down here. And so most of my friends came from the Albury Club and mm-hmm, so forth, which, you know, and those friendships have stayed with me.
Yeah. Well, and also I think beyond the friendships, if you listen and have discussions with those people, as you said,
with the different the breeds that they have, and
yeah.
It's interesting to hear some of the things go on in their specialty clubs and so forth.
Very interesting.
And about their different dogs. And then, of course, once I went into judging, then I judged all of the sporting breeds plus all of the hound breeds. So there was a lot of learning and meeting with many, many different people to get a feel for their breed. Because if you don't have a feel for a breed, you can't judge it. You've got to know the purpose of that breed, and talk to good breeders within the breeds to know certain things that they either want to see or don't want to see, so that you can be objective when you judge them. I mean, we all have standards, but you interpret those standards.
Yeah, they have different issues. I know in looking at rescue, for instance, the Golden Retrievers are amazing. That club, I think we do a good job, and they just, like, you go to their website, and it's just overwhelming how much stuff that they do, and as a breed, you know,
exactly.
I mean, and you go to so many other breed clubs, and you learn, and you talk to other breeders, and you talk about issues that you're facing, and they talk about issues that they're facing, and it's fun, actually. There's always something to learn, so
I think... It's a learning experience every day.
Should be. But going back to your suggestion, you have to be willing to listen. So
yes.
You did say
and
that.
Make a decision.
So.
You can get different opinions, but then you've got to make a choice of what's maybe a little bit more important to you than this. And like I say, our club is going to come a long way in sponsoring and doing for the Cocker, and the foundation is doing a fantastic job.
Well, we're lucky that everybody's supporting the
stuff.
Eye. So.
Yes. Because I say that is something that's never going to go away. We all know you can breed clear, and five generations down the line come up with a problem.
Yeah, I know.
So you've just got to be very careful, and if you have a problem, you've got to say, okay, and just place those and start again.
Dr. Rubin, many, many years ago, if you know Dr. Rubin from University of Pennsylvania, was kind of at the forefront of finding, cataracts. And 40 years ago or so, Rubin said to me, he said, well, if you don't want cataracts, then don't breed cockers. And it's kind of fatalistic.
Yeah.
It's fatalistic. But his point,
I know.
But his point was, it's there. So you make educated.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, Marilyn, this has been real fun talking with you.
Well, I've enjoyed it, Charlie. It's been fun talking with you and reminiscing.
And I know you didn't want to talk about yourself, but I think you did a great job.
Thank you, dear.
So if you would hang on
and
just a
moment.
When
will I see you at Spaniel Club?
Well, we'll talk about that. Let me close out this recording. We won't share that with everybody.
Okay.
On the recording. So if you'll hang on a moment. Everybody, thank you for listening. Again, these podcasts are up on the website. You'll see all the others there. We'll be continually producing those through this year into next and until we run out of subjects, and I doubt we ever will. So thank you again, Marilyn, for your time, and goodbye, everybody.